It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany. This is my show, and today we are talking Slammiversary with my good friend, the TNA and WWE correspondent for WrestleTalk.tv, Mr. Marcus Green. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Glad to finally get back to some TNA business.
Yeah, our home base. This is how we started on the Troopany Show. Me and Marcus talking was TNA, so this is what we like to do every once in a while. And, you know, occasionally they give us a big event to talk about. We will talk about Slammiversary in a moment, but first, a word from our sponsor.
WrestlePlus.com is the brand new home of incredible online wrestling content, featuring uncensored shoot interview classics, full series of WrestleTalk TV and British Wrestling Weekly, exclusive documentaries, British wrestling's biggest names before they were stars, an incredible podcast collection, up to 90% off merchandise offers, and the brand new Power Slammed e-magazine forwarded by Finn Martin himself. WrestlePlus has thousands of hours of content with new and exclusive releases added regularly. You can join today for the stupidly low price of just £4.99 a month. Wrestle Plus, because this is wrestling.
Okay then, so Slammiversary took place in Orlando, Florida this weekend, which I'm trying to remember the date here. What was it? It'd be the 12th of June. It was an interesting event. It was one of the first pay-per-views they've done in a long time where they actually built things properly.
Yeah.
And to an extent they paid off a lot of things as well. And to an extent, they didn't pay off a lot of things, which is my problem with the show. I know you have been very positive towards the show, though. What was your feelings overall towards the whole product?
Yeah, I thought it delivered for what they, you know, were trying to do. After, you know, we've gone over this before. After coming off of two seemingly disappointing back-to-back years of Bound for Glory, which is their biggest show of the year, it was just good to see them, like you said, finally build to a show properly. And you know, deliver on something. And I thought, you know, if nothing else, the wrestlers, you know, went out there and gave 100%, especially two brothers in particular.
I agree with you with that. Me and the Hardy Boys are not getting on very well right now, so that'll be an interesting review later, which you know about because of my response last night on Twitter. And to be honest with you, one of the main reasons it was nothing to do with the show. I was trying to find the tweet earlier, and I'm sure Matt Hardy sent a tweet out, which I was very, very unhappy about before the show, which concerned the Orlando shooting. Now, the show opened with
a tribute. A moment of silence.
Yeah, a moment of silence towards Orlando, and noticeably, Matt Hardy was not there. But before the show, he sent a tweet out saying, I can't remember exactly
it was something to the point of, you know, saddened by this day, but allow me to entertain you.
Yeah.
Something to that degree, and that got a lot of a lot of people on the net. I know a lot of people had a bunch of differing opinions back and forth. I don't think he meant it maliciously at all, but I think it was a weird combination of trying to stay in his current character and also try to reference things. But he kind of should have just kept it separate.
Yeah, so. Just leave well alone. You don't even have to mention it. You know, to me, it's like 49 people have died. Mm-hmm. You don't mess around with that. Leave it well alone. This is not a character. This is not you speaking out in character. This is the fact that you're trying to make money out of a tragedy. And to me, it was just absolutely disgusting. Sorry to be. I don't tend to rant too much on these things, but this was just like, what are you doing? You know. And
I feel you.
Yeah, it's just so wrong. And aside from the other issues I've had with this particular angle, but we'll get to that in time. And yeah, I don't want to go on a mad rant about it because I want this to be a positive show, but I think that's maybe something for future podcasts. But we talked about it before. We talked about it on like controlling your social media, and your social media presence is so important in wrestling now. And that a veteran of the business who should know better did that is just ridiculous. And that's just me. We'll move on to more positive things. The show opened with, like we said, the tribute to the Orlando shooting. Oh, well, not tribute to the Orlando shooting, the people who died in the Orlando shooting. There was a dark match, which is Mandrews versus Paradise, which obviously we didn't see. I assume it was pretty good because it had Mark Andrews in. So, yeah. Who's been doing quite well lately on the independent scene. It seems that no one in TNA notices how good he is. And that's a bit of a theme I feel. But anyway, yeah, opening match of the pay-per-view that we did actually see is Eddie Edwards winning the X Division Championship over Trevor Lee, Andrew Everett, and DJZ in 10 minutes and 12 seconds. Your thoughts, sir?
I thought it was a cracking match. I thought it was a great way to, obviously, they usually always kick things off with the X Division to really, you know, as Pope would say, put a shot of caffeine into the show, if you will. I thought this was, considering how much they've kind of, you know, overused to a certain extent these multi-man matches in the X Division, because I've been calling for some time for them to kind of get back to that one-on-one feuds. But I think this was probably one of the best executed multi-man matches that I've seen from the X Division in a while. And I thought it was very good the way they did it. Obviously, Andrew Everett stood out, as he usually, you know, does. And I like the ending, because it came down to, you know, Edwards and Lee, and we've, you know, coming into this match, Edwards probably should have been the champion. But, yeah. Also that cue by management to get Helms out of there, that was great, because, you know, with him at ringside, it could only go on one way, so.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. To me, this should have been two matches. It should have been Andrew Everett versus DJZ and Eddie Edwards versus Trevor Lee. That should have been, you know, it should have been, just have Trevor Lee and Eddie Edwards. It's not that I dislike four-way matches, but I've just seen it so often, you know, and it's like, it's just, we just go back to basics, because they stopped being special. And, you know, you're right, they did do this incredibly well for what it was. There wasn't any spots that looked like it all flowed. It was like a natural story being told, and it was very understandable and direct. And kudos to Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett for raising up their standards, I think, to Eddie Edwards and DJZ's level. These are two guys who have been at the top of promotions for a long time, and Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett and doing well to put in such a good performance. But they shouldn't have had to do that. It should have just been heads up Eddie Edwards versus Trevor Lee. And I think it's good for the division, though, because it's got a bit more of a name wrestler, former Ring of Honor world champion Eddie Edwards at the top of the X Division. I think he's going to be good for the company, rather than, no knock on Trevor Lee and Tigre Uno in the immediately prior X Division champions, but there wasn't as much kudos there.
Yeah, and it's real good to keep Edwards in that singles build, especially because, you know, coming in, everybody kind of knows the pedigree with the Wolves, both individually and as a tag team. They're great either way, but, you know, keeping Edwards in that spotlight, maintaining the gravitas that he's, you know, come to know on the indie scene over the years, is great. Like you said, it's great for the X Division, and it keeps him busy while, you know, obviously Richards recovers. So
yeah, moving on then. That was 10 minutes and 12 seconds. The next match was 7 minutes and 35 seconds, and I thought this was way longer.
Yeah.
The Tribunal, Basil Baraka and Baron Dax defeated Grado and Mahabali Shearer. I'll get it pronounced right. Mahabali Shearer. This was what it was, essentially. It was the Quebecers versus Demolition from 1988, replayed in front of a modern audience. I don't dislike it. I like Grado a lot. I think he's awesome. I don't think they're getting anywhere near enough out of him that they should be doing. I think Shearer could be doing an awful lot more, but it's nice to see a traditional tag team in the Tribunal doing Healy-type stuff and doing it really well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential there with the Tribunal. Obviously, Shearer and Grado, they kind of got them together. I'm surprised they haven't just changed his name to Shearer, since they, you know, they kind of like those singular names. But yeah, you know, they're a unique team. They have a lot. I think they got a lot of potential to do some great stuff on the show if they use Shearer and Grado properly. But I think my biggest takeaway from this whole thing has really been, I kind of taking a liking to Al Snow a little bit, just what he's doing, just because it's like, he's like, it's absolutely absurd. Now he's got this doggone whistle. He's like, he's like the Xavier Woods at ringside with this whistle. So it's, definitely entertaining. And I never thought I'd be in 2016 saying I'm mildly excited to see Al Snow on my TV every week. So just on that thing alone, like you said, it was what it was, and I'm glad to see we got some new life in the tag division.
Yeah, it did seem, and I hope they do keep Grado and Shearer together. I mean, I think, yeah, it worked out. The problem I have with it, this is more to do with Grado and Shearer. You know, Grado everywhere else in the world is a main event level talent that pulls in thousands for ICW. He can sell out the biggest arenas in Scotland by himself. And Shearer, after the World Series last year looked like he was going to get a main event push. He was, you know, there was talk of the Indian Tour. It was like, you know, making him a challenger for the World Championship was the obvious thing to do, and they did a really good job of it. And then the Indian Tour got cancelled, you know, which is another TNA trait which we haven't had lately, which is announcing things and then cancelling them a week later. Thankfully, that stopped. But, you know, it just seems to me like they're not going anywhere with these two when they should be doing. But I think, yeah, the Tribunal should be an interesting foil for wherever they go next. I presume that it's going to be the bromance, would at a guess. So we'll see what happens there. Next, we had Sienna defeating Jade and Gail Kim for the championship. Right, this one, I love everyone involved in this match, including Maria and Ali, and I think Sienna's absolutely awesome. And my love of Jade's wrestling style has been well known for a very long time, and Gail Kim is a legend. And I hated this match because it shouldn't have happened, because that's not what was billed. And it was an angle portrayed as a match, and I didn't like it for that reason. And it just wasn't long enough, to be honest, for me. It again, we've got a multi-person match, which we didn't need. I'll stop ranting and I'll explain a bit more. You give your thoughts, Marcus.
Yeah, like you said, it was disappointing coming in, too, because obviously they let it be known on Twitter about the whole x-rays and everything. It's kind of like, because we know how the shows are taped, a lot of times life can very much interfere with these things coming up, and I think that's kind of what happened. And, you know, they called something on the fly, and like you said, it worked. It was another multi-man match, and big fan of all three of these, you know, competitors, and especially Maria and Ali. Ali is just aggravatingly awesome right now. And
yeah.
The one thing I you know, obviously these girls are great in their own respective rights, and Sienna's definitely coming into her own and looking very dominant. But I also like the kind of ending to the match.
Yeah.
Because especially with running with Marty, because I was very much wondering how they were going to, you know, bring her back into the fold. And I think, you know, kudos to TNA for keeping that, once again, getting back to that consistency, going back to simple logic of why this person would want to, you know, feud with this person. So
yeah, that bit I didn't mind. But again, I would just rather have had Sienna versus Jade and not had Gail Kim on the show. But you're not going to not put Gail Kim on the show. Or alternatively, I'd have had Jade versus Gail Kim instead. Gail Kim versus Sienna, or Gail Kim versus Ali. All of which, but I mean, the trouble is with the Ali character is she's supposed to be a clueless secretary when, you know, and this is another thing I have a problem with TNA is a lot of people who come in who are new, we are trained to believe they aren't any good. And then it makes it really hard for them to show that they are some good. You know, like Rockstar Spud was a good example. They did that really well. And I'm hoping they're going to do a similar job with Ali. But you have to understand, like, a week ago, she was representing Canada at the AAA Lucha World Cup. She is a known wrestling star. She's a main eventer for WSU. She's worked for Shine. She's really, really good. And you put her in a character where she's supposed to be not good. And it's like, this jars with me at times because it's going to make it harder for her to get over in other ways. Also, Billy Corgan. Why are we turning Billy Corgan heel? What's the deal there?
Yeah, I don't. They got him in a weird gray area when it comes to the Miracle and his lovely wife there. But he's being featured more. And I think something's kind of picked up behind the scenes in terms of his involvement, definitely involvement in the company. So.
I
don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to say go on the record now that that's a mistake, because he still has no presence whatsoever. He can't be a character because he can barely say anything without mumbling over his lines. And just stop now. Give up. Don't bother.
Yeah, and the shades indoors, and it's just, yeah.
Just stay. You know, the show's doing so well without you there.
Yeah.
And it's like, it beggars belief that, do you see Gabe Pulaski dying to be in front of the camera on Evolve shows? I don't watch them, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, so why do we need to see you? You know, and again, it falls back on a bunch of stuff. I wrote an article a while back about a month ago for WrestleTalk.tv about this angle and the Maria Kanellis leadership of the knockouts. And it's like, no, the most important thing in the women's division in TNA should be the championship. And the moment you start taking shine off the championship, it matters less. And it's just an annoyance to me that you can't get this right. And 8 minutes for a championship match is an insult. It should have been 15 at least. But that's just me being grumpy James today. But anyway.
Yeah, did you think about the run-in at the end?
I think the run-in's good. Yeah, that bit I didn't mind so much. Marty Bell, I think, needs somewhere to go. And at least, you know, when you've been told that you're going to have two women's matches on a card, I'm really excited because I like women's wrestling. So to me, it was like, I knew Maria versus Gail Kim wasn't going to be a regular kind of match. You know, it was going to be Maria trying to get out of it. But it still had a draw of interest for me. Whereas, you know, it's nice to know that they're going to bring people in, and you've still got a few people to kind of figure into that. You've got forgotten her name. Josh Matthews' wife.
Oh, you're talking about Madison Rayne.
Yeah, Madison Rayne. Yeah, you still got to figure out where Madison Rayne's going to fit into all this. So it's starting to make more sense.
Yeah, and Rebel.
And Rebel, yes, true. So yeah, it's all starting to click together and make more sense. So I'm happy in one sense. Just I wish this match could have been, the match was good for what it was, but it could have been so much better. And that's the bit that is just, like, they seem to get so far and then it all falls apart. Especially when the next match is James Storm versus Braxton Sutter, and I have no idea why this match was on this card. Just couldn't tell you. So to me, it's like, well, get rid of that match and give them the extra 6 minutes and you've got something that's worth watching to me. So that's just me, though. What did you think of James Storm versus Braxton Sutter?
Yeah, I thought, you know, kind of like, just like you said, I didn't even think about that until you said about to, you know, just take this match off and add in time. But obviously, you got a name like James Storm, and he obviously got brought back to TNA very much. I assume he's being very well compensated. So obviously, I guess you don't want to have a guy like that you're, you know, very much well paying, very good, and have your one of your biggest shows of the year. You don't want to feature him. And at the same time, Storm is in that spot to kind of be that, you know, veteran who helps the younger guys, and you got another name who was very well established on the indies, who we're supposed to kind of, you know, think is kind of almost rookie-esque at a certain age,
yeah,
and Braxton Sutter. So, you know, they wanted to get him some more shine. So I understand it. And like you said, it was just last minute thing on the show.
Yeah, and it's just like, and there's the thing again. Here's a guy who's a 14-year veteran, but he's considered a nervous rookie. And it's like, well, you know, Mike Bennett comes in, and he's a 10-year veteran, and he's considered a main eventer straight away. You know, it's just like, there's a mixed level narrative here that, yeah, I can understand what you're doing. You don't want Braxton Sutter to come in at the same level as Mike Bennett, obviously, because you're portraying Mike Bennett as a main eventer straight off the bat. But equally, you know, it just confuses the audience. Like, this guy's been around for 14 years, then why hasn't he got signed by a major company? If you keep mentioning things like that, don't then. You know, just kind of like create your narrative better. I suppose we should talk about Pope and Matthews at this particular moment in time, because I didn't think they did too bad. Obviously, Matthews was terrible, but Pope was great, so I thought it was okay.
Usually the saving grace,
yeah. So I didn't think they did too bad in this one. So Matthews still grates on me. He's just great. So he didn't make the one mistake I did hear him make. And I did mention this on Twitter, it was in the women's match. And he goes, obviously, there are no countouts in this three-way match. And then you hear the referee going, 4, 5. It's like, are you watching the same thing I am? No. Yeah. So I didn't think they did too badly. But yeah, so James Storm and Braxton Sutter, 6 minutes and 41s of entertainment. But we have no idea why it was there. So it just could have, it's something that could have gone on Impact and been done so much better, in my opinion. But that's just me. Eli Drake defeated Bram to retain his TNA King of the Mountain Championship. An entertaining blast, I thought, this one.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of everything. They've really picked things up with Drake, as they should, because he's a phenomenal talent, especially on the mic, and has single-handedly brought probably one of the most entertaining segments to TNA that we've seen in years. So, you know, and with Bram, you know, he's another great talent. I think he's kind of was in that gray area coming off of the thing with Eric Young, which I thought was great, and I thought he was going to get a longer run with the title. But obviously, like I said, in my talking points, I'm a big fan of Drake. So, you know, seeing him, you know, be able to defend and get a clean win nonetheless. It was cool. So,
yeah,
you know, a little slip and slide on Drake's end. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, it was good. I really enjoyed it. I'm with you. I think Eli Drake's a really underrated talent who's really been given chance to shine in TNA. And I think Bram's done incredibly good things since turning face. It's difficult when you've got a character like that that is so in your face and aggressive.
Yeah.
To keep the edge when you turn. So I think he's done incredibly well to do that job so well. And again, it was another one that felt longer than 8 minutes and 37 seconds. I don't know how whether it was the structure. It's a short match for what seemed to take a long time.
Yeah, I think there's the Drake is very much not wanting to go toe to toe with the what do you call it? The plague, the Chesterfield plague.
The Chesterfield plague. Yeah. You don't know about anything about Chesterfield, I would guess. It's a town in the Derbyshire Dales, and I've been quite a few times. I had a holiday there, actually. We spent a weekend away there. It's very, very nice. It's one of those places, like when Josh Matthew comes out with the Chesterfield plague, and it's like I'm thinking of a nice little market town on a hillside with a nice church. And it's just like, this is one of those things that's been lost in translation. It's got a twisted church spire because the spire was made out of copper and wood, so it's warped. So the spire is twisted. If you look it up on Google, you'll be able to find a picture of it, and you'll go, "Ah, that's where he comes from." Yeah. So to me, it's just like it's a really good nickname because you have no idea what Chesterfield's like. Right then, moving on. One of the big matches from the card was Ethan Carter III, who defeated Mike Bennett at last in his ongoing series. It was 15 minutes long, this match. I have been a massive fan of this match. I think it's worked incredibly well. And it goes to show what you were saying earlier, Marcus. Good, old-fashioned, simple ideas in wrestling still sell tickets more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ethan, you know, no matter what they've done with him, from everything coming off of his stint with, you know, taking out legends, he's just been phenomenal. Always, you know, both in front of the camera, behind the camera, on social media, he's another one of those guys who can kind of, you know, ride that storm pretty good. And Bennett has just, like you said, unlike some of the other independent stars, he's come in, especially with his wife, and done phenomenal job. And I thought this match delivered kind of what we kind of wanted to get with Kim and Maria, but, you know, we kind of know how that went. So,
yeah,
I thought this was one of the best matches of the night. And obviously, you know, Ethan had to avenge his loss.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key thing for me is Bennett doesn't really do a massive amount. He's not a technical great, but he does deliver it so well. He feels like a main event kind of guy. You know, he's a guy that really kind of puts a match together, and his timing is impeccable. And similar thing with Ethan Carter, who was trying some new things, putting some new things out there. Like the power bomb, that was good, and you know, he's done some interesting stuff. Certainly, Ethan Carter with what he's been doing, and I like the fact it took three 1%ers to put Mike Bennett away. You know, it protected Mike Bennett a lot, very well as well. It showed you how tough this match was, and 15 minutes was about right for this match, I thought. So yeah, I think it was good stuff, and good stuff from TNA generally.
Yeah,
we're flying through this card because we've only got three matches left. We're going to have to talk a lot about what we're going to do next. Okay, then we have Jeff Hardy versus Matt Hardy in a Falls Count Anywhere Full Metal Mayhem match. Let's start at the beginning with this one. Oh, God.
Yeah, I think this will eat up some time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Where did we go?
Should we start in North Carolina and work our way up?
40 years ago. Matt Hardy, his character change. Let's see. It really all started, I suppose, at just before the World Series last year, when Matt Hardy takes the title from EC3 with the help of Jeff Hardy as special referee in the match. And it's been a bit of a convoluted storyline ever since. Obviously, Matt turns on Jeff around about Christmas time. They have this big match where Jeff does a, quite frankly, ludicrous senton bomb through a table, which apparently changes Matt Hardy's character into this weird. The only thing way I've described it is Bill Murray's character in Caddyshack. That kind of voice is the only thing I can describe it. It's just, it's bizarre. Dyed his hair, put a streak in his hair, and his entire defense for this was, we're not after smart mark wrestling fans, we're after the wider audience. And it's just like, right, I'm not being funny, but Matt Hardy, you're kind of a big deal. People know who you are. People know who Jeff Hardy is as well. You don't have to do this stuff to sell tickets. It's Matt Hardy versus Jeff Hardy in a street fight. People will see that. You don't have to try, and you are trying way too hard. So hard.
Enigma versus the man who will not die.
And it's just, and then last week we have this, and it's been well discussed on all of the Wrestle Talk podcasts this week. Finn Martin and Alex Shane talked about it last week. Paul Taylor and Gavin Duenis talked about it. So it's only fair we have our shot at this. There was the Jeff Hardy Matt Hardy promo video mini movie thing there where Jeff ends up being planted through a table, and it's just all kinds of wrong. At this point, I'm going to stop talking and let Marcus speak. What did you think of the build-up to this match?
Yeah, it's just that particular segment alone, it was just, I had to really sit back and look at it because it got so much noise. And I was just looking at this whole thing with Matt Hardy, and I was like, this is so outlandish and over the top. But when things, I've always been the guy for some reason when people do stuff like this, the level, I kind of appreciate that level of commitment to it. This guy commits, like, so much so that he almost should be committed for what he's doing with this. But I said it when I was writing about it. I was like, Dave just set out on this road, and we're just gonna have to ride it out with him because he's not slowing down. Like, it has been some of the worst, best stuff I've seen in a while. Like, it's literally so bad it's good, and he's dead serious with the whole brother hero and the look and the speech cadence. And it's like, I'm like, is he trying to be some type of weird Willow Beethoven? Like, what is that whole segment was hilarious. And one thing it did do, because I was listening to other podcasts, and it was like, it got people talking about TNA again.
It did.
It got people talking. It got a buzz. And I've always appreciated Jeff Hardy for you know, the way he puts his body on the line, but I've never been a fan of his mic work.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Because
he's always been up and down in his cadence and back and forth. And, you know, I've always preferred his you know, backing up his talking in the ring. But, yeah, it's just, you know, he committed to it, and it's definitely going to be remembered.
Yeah.
Like, it's a bit, definitely in that Joker Sting realm of yeah, that happened.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Matt Hardy, and you know, it's such a simple layout for this match. You know, you got two iconic wrestlers. One believes he's been shortchanged in public perception, and he picks a feud, whether they're brothers or not. The brothers puts it over the edge, and it's just so easy to do, and it's been done so many times before. In fact, they've done it so many times before.
Yeah, that's several times.
Several times before in many different companies, and this is a case for... And this was something that Bruce Pritchard said a long while ago when he spent 18 months as executive producer at TNA. His big issue was there was no point in being there because people didn't want to be produced. You know, he wanted to kind of like round off some edges and try and, you know, but he made himself unpopular because people have been telling the wrestlers in the company for such a long time that they were really, really good, and therefore why did they need being produced? And that was his problem with working in TNA. He couldn't get things done that he wanted to get done. And this is a good example of that. I think it's like, you know, you've got a couple of wrestlers that no one's going to produce because it's Jeff and Matt Hardy, and no one's going to tell them you're doing this wrong, which is why you end up with videos like that, which are so hilariously bad.
Yeah, I mean, the one good thing we did get, I don't know if you've seen the parody that
I haven't seen it,
Drake,
no.
EC3 and Tyrus and Spud did, but that was great. Just EC3's imitation was hilarious, and Eli Drake looking dumbfounded about what he's doing is is great. And I hope they do more of that. But yeah, I mean,
yeah,
what it really came down to for me in terms of the match, it ended up just being one of those things where, you know, where you go to the movies and it's like one of these disaster, natural disaster movies.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you're just going to kind of see, you know, pardon the term, disaster porn. And that's kind of what it ended up being. I'm like, because in my mind, even though the stuff is taped, I'm like, he should still damn near not be walking after that insane Swanton. But I know the way they taped it, it's been weeks. But after this match, it's like, why do you guys should not be seen for months? Like,
yeah. They're just not selling stuff enough. I mean, arguably, you could say, well, Matt's selling it because of this crazy character.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, he's still got a bit, he's 200-pound guy landed on him from 20 feet up. I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you're trying to add realism to this, which they're clearly not, then you need to spend a bit more time off, or you need to do something less insane. And the other thing is, for me with this, is they're two guys who are in their early 40s, late 30s, they don't have to do this stuff. They don't have to do half this stuff to stay over. You know, this is like, you know, people are interested in them. You know, yes, put yourselves in peril, but they could have done that with one big spot long before what they did before then. You know, to me, it just seemed like, why are you putting so much into this match? Because you're not the main event, which is fair enough. But and I understand that you try and work harder to bring people in, and I can understand that as well. But there comes a point where this is the payoff day. This is the end. Tomorrow you start again, you know, and you've got to be fresh and ready for the people who you're going to start again with, rather than killing yourself, especially as they do their TV tapings straight afterwards, didn't they? So, you know, to me, it's like just the whole execution of this, though it wasn't a bad idea. The whole thing was not a bad idea to do. It's just been the execution and the lack of production. And I don't mean production values, because the production values, even on, like, you know, Alex was saying, like helicopter shot, that drone shot that they did of Jeff riding his motorcycle up to was like brilliant. And this like world-class, you know, kind of like cinematography. It's just a terrible idea. It's a really bad idea shot really well. I don't mean production values. I mean, it's like someone saying, that's stupid, don't do it. They need to, producers in TNA need to grab hold of these guys a little bit better. But then again, you know, we complain a lot. One of the complaints against Dixie is she's a mark for the business a lot of the time. So if the boss isn't going to tell them they're doing it wrong, who is going to tell them they're doing it wrong?
Yeah, and I think most of this stuff was kind of from, if I'm not mistaken, the Omega days.
Yeah. So it was backyard wrestling ideas.
Yeah.
Would you contrast that with Ethan Carter III and Mike Bennett, which was an entire feud lifted from World Class Championship Wrestling in 1984, because it was David Von Erich versus Jimmy Garvin, exactly to the making him clean toilets, and you know, it was that. It was as simple as that. You know, it was slightly rearranged, but it was just lifted because why? Well, it made a ton of money for Prince Von Erich in Dallas, so why wouldn't it make a ton of money now? You know,
exactly. So, and you know, like I said, credit to these guys at their age still doing what they're doing with the myriad of injuries that both of them have sustained over their careers. It just got to the point where I was legitimately just, okay, please let this be the end of it. Like this particular thing, we didn't, okay, you put them through a freaking piano. Are you serious? Like,
yeah.
it got to that point. I kind of just walked away just being happy that these guys just walked away at all, because like I said, it's crazy, and I don't know if I don't know when we're gonna see the end of this thing,
because
it's a thing where it's like, okay, we saw what got him into this, what in the blue hell is gonna get him out of that? Like, what's gonna bring him back from the broken, you know the broken one?
And, it is like, you know, these kind of matches, especially the kind of this level. You know, DDT do the Iron Man championship. Current DDT Iron Man champion is Rey Mysterio, by the way. They do that, and it's like, but it's all played for laughs. It's like the old WWE Hardcore Championship. But they essentially do the same things that the Hardys are doing, but the DDT guys are doing it for a laugh. You know, it's for purely for entertainment's sake, whereas Matt and Jeff are being serious about it, and it's like, I can't get my head around it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, just, it's just strange. But anyway, yeah, by the way, if you look up the DDT Iron Man Championship, the Wikipedia page doesn't have a list of champions because there's been that many champions, including including a ladder and a pet dog. But yeah, you should look it up. Some really good. Asuka from NXT. She's been Iron Man champion a couple of times. Anyway. So the Matt and Jeff Hardy, yes, had their false count anywhere Full Metal Mayhem match. Moving on, Decay successfully, I kind of think surprisingly successfully, defended their World Tag Team Championships against the Bromans, Robbie Eason and Jesse Goddard, in 9 minutes and 18 seconds. And for what it was, I think this was a very good World Tag Team Championship match. Could have been longer, again, but that's my decry. I think 9 matches on the pay-per-view was probably about 3 too many, to be honest. But I thought this tag team match was pretty good for what it was. And I can't say enough about Jesse Goddard. He's just so good now.
Yeah, I've really been a fan of this, you know, reformed bromance. Like I said, I think it was great because I wasn't that big of a fan of these guys in the first run just because of the goofiness and the so many ties to the jersey show and all that. But when they separated and they did that great feud and they kind of separated them and they got serious individually and then they came back together, you know, the vibe that they're having now is they're just such viable contenders. And you very much think, you know, you got Robbie E trying to be this hybrid wrestler, and you got Jesse just so impressive, like, you know, from the press slams to freaking springboards he's doing now. So, you know, I've loved it. Decay has been phenomenal. And I think, you know, kudos to the company for not taking the titles off them so soon. I think it looks good that they're looking strong, obviously, with their gimmick. So, you know, Rosemary has, you know, done wonders for those two. And adding Raquel to the bromans, I think, like I said, it gives her a spot. I think with the bromans, it kind of works for what those two guys do. And, you know, like I said, it adds a foil for Rosemary. So,
yeah, I think this is the makings of a long-term feud because essentially, and this is no knock on either team, we're waiting for Davey Richards to come back so the Wolves can have another run, essentially, is what I assume is what's going to happen. Unless something, you know... Unless they decide to run Eddie Edwards versus Davey Richards again, the old Ring of Honor feud, which was really, really good. So I wouldn't mind seeing that again.
But
we'll see. But yeah, certainly Decay and the Bromans, I think they have really good chemistry. I think Abyss is doing the right thing. He's taking the back step and letting Crazy Steve and Rosemary run the show. He's clearly helping them out in as far as presence is concerned and giving them some rub, but equally Crazy Steve and Rosemary are not along for the ride. They're driving the train, so this is really good for them. I think Robbie has been excellent. I think he's been consistently good at everything he's ever done, you know, and
yeah,
eventually it starts to pay off for him. And the World Tag Team Championships now are a much higher level than they was than the last time they wore them, because the last time they wore them, it was a bit down in the doldrums. And
yeah,
they had that feud with the Wolves, which kind of brought them up, but they weren't really as good as a team as they are now. And basically, because Jesse Goddard is really, really good now, and he was a bit green before. But I think Jesse Goddard, for me, during that second tag title run they had, was when he really opened up and got confident and got good. That three-way match he had in Japan on the Wrestle One show, I was really impressed with him there. He got King's Road style really, really well. And he's one of the guys that suffers from not having a big, long independent career before he gets to TNA, because he hasn't really got an awful lot of depth, like experience depth from different styles to bring to the table. And he's had to learn that and do it in front of everybody. And I think now he's got there, he's doing really, really good things.
Yeah, and I don't think we've seen him really that much in a singles capacity either, because he wasn't in the tournament over the summer.
No, he wasn't.
But, you know, like I said, I'm glad to see Abyss. This is probably one of the most productive things we've seen for Abyss in a long time, because he's always been one of those guys in the company. He's very much TNA's Kane, if you will.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can depend on him to do a lot of different things. He's very much, you know, gung-ho for anything. But, you know, over the years, you know, with the whole Joseph Park thing and the masking and unmasking, it's kind of just been limbo for him. So I'm glad to see he's finally kind of found a groove in this instance. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the Bromans, you know, get another run with the belts eventually, because, you know, like I said, they're a great tag team now. And I'd love to see them get a program, another program with the Wolves in this incarnation. So,
yeah,
I think I definitely love to see this continue, especially with the teams that's growing in the tag team, like with the Tribunal. So,
yeah, I think that's going to be interesting, because the interesting thing was the fact that the Tribunal won as heels and Decay won as heels. So the obvious thing to do is the Tribunal versus Decay, but that's not going to work as well. So you might get Grado and Shearer versus Decay first. Though how they could, they kind of didn't really think about long-term booking for this, did they? They should have really have had Grado and Shearer kind of sneak one out. But then again, they don't want to bury their new team either. So it's kind of, they kind of stuck themselves, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
I certainly think the Bromans and Tribunal could have a really good long series of interesting matches. And it is very, you know, the Tribunal very much like a traditional 80s kind of tag team. Like I said, they're kind of a bit like the Quebecers. They're a bit like Rhythm and Blues. Those kind of semi-nondescript 80s WWF tag teams. But, you know, they knew what they were doing. And, you know, if you, it, actually, Quebecers, if you look up Jacques and the Rougeau brothers, I should say. If you look up the Rougeau brothers in Puerto Rico, there's matches there, and you forget how good they were, because they were really, really good at getting heat more than anything else. And if you look up Rougeau brothers in Puerto Rico, they cause a riot. So, well worth watching. Anyway, so that was the Decay defending their tag team championships really, really well. And I also just wanted to add, I have to say that Jesse Goddard's dropkick may be the best one in pro wrestling today, with the exception of Kazuchika Okada. I think those two are just phenomenal with their drop kicks at the moment.
Yeah, it's a list of guys that got great drop kicks. But I think, yeah, you're pretty much bang on that. The height that he gets on that is like almost like he should be trying to drop kick the great Khali with the height he gets on that. So it's always, you know, the sky's the limit with that guy.
Yeah, Okada's like dropkick is he can put people on the top rope and dropkick them in the chest from the top, whilst they're sat on the top rope. So Goddard has got it in beauty, and Okada has it in height, I think. So that's a dream match for you. Jesse Goddard versus Kazuchika Okada. It'll never happen because we're working for companies that are completely locked out from one another. But there you go.
Yeah, shout out to the Bromans for that great transition finisher from the bro down to the Adonis crab.
Yeah, really, really good. And it is the old Hart Foundation Heart Attack clothesline. And it's like, I was waiting for somebody must have come up with that again sooner rather than later. But I suppose it was such an iconic move that it took somebody a while to get into it. But there you go. But anyway, Lashley defeats Drew Galloway in a submission or knockouts match for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship in 17 minutes and 4 seconds. This was really good. I find Drew Galloway sometimes a little bit over the top in his positivity, and this may be creeped into this match a little bit for me. But aside from that, and you know, aside from the blade job, which he probably didn't really need to do to get this match over, I thought this was really, really good. And I thought Lashley stepped it up a notch. I thought Galloway really looked and felt like a world champion, and it felt like a big money match. This felt like a match that was about the future of the company.
Yeah, it really did. Kudos to both of these guys. They've really been, you know, busting their asses trying to make this, you know, with this great build to this event. And like I said, it was definitely going to be interesting seeing how they did this match, because we've seen them clash before. So it's always interesting to me with guys like in the history of the company, as many times as they made AJ Styles and Chris Daniels fight. And he was like, how could they do this differently? It's like their 100th match. But with these guys, I mean, you really felt the tension, and it was great out the gate. Galloway hitting the Claymore and just all that. And I think both of these guys have really stepped up, especially Lashley on the intensity. I think he's gotten better on the mic. He's really kind of just owning his character and really coming into his own, being this bully character. And yeah, it was a cracking match. They really delivered. I think, you know, kicking off the show like they did with that great X Division bout in this one. It was a great booking to the show.
Yeah, I think they got the beginning and the end right, and sometimes that's all you need. You know, this certainly was a memorable match, and it was a memorable card because of this match with some other high spots in between. You know, not every card can be fantastic and knock it out of the park good. So this one worked really, really well. I think, for me, the slight worry going into it, and I mentioned this in my Slammiversary preview that I wrote for WrestleTalk.tv, was this kind of match and a TNA audience aren't necessarily made for each other, because it's a bit more complicated than a regular wrestling match, even though there's less rules, which sounds a bit strange. But a tap out or knockout match is essentially a UWFI match, and the match I listed as the best example of this was Minoru Suzuki versus Kazuchika Sakuraba from Wrestle Kingdom 9, which was an incredibly good match. And Suzuki and Sakuraba were, you know, they're both pro wrestlers, but they learned from a shoot style basis rather than from an entertainment style basis. So they really knew how to get the best out of it. But the important thing is, New Japan fans are really well versed in submission. They tend to cross over with MMA kind of an awful lot. And, you know, they would understand UWF and shoot fighting and shoot wrestling differently than a TNA audience that may only have a casual awareness of MMA. So it was a big risk going into this match, and I'm glad that they delivered this match in a much more wrestling kind of manner without going too far down the MMA route.
Yeah, that was great. And I thought just Galloway's, and I think this kind of was more so ended up being his detriment. He really got the feeling that he absolutely needed to beat Lashley definitively in the match. So he kind of got, you know, maybe a little overzealous with certain things and, you know, stopping the count. Like, don't ever stop the count if you really just want to win, but you know, you want to make a point about it. And I thought it was great. Lashley, the whole build to this thing was like, Drew, you can't beat me. Like, I'm going to beat you up time and again. I'm going to spear you. And, you know, you can't beat me. I can knock you out or tap you out. And the end of the match was, he probably knocked him out and then tapped him out. So yeah, that, you know, just that definitive finish really, you know, put Lashley over the top.
Yeah, I mean, I think we may be getting slightly overused in this finish from other things. The trouble is, I watched that much wrestling in the space of a year, because essentially it's the same finish to Asuka Bayley from NXT Dallas, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
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 So, you know, and I was looking back at old Kana matches that I've been writing for the WrestleTalk article section. If you go to features on WrestleTalk.tv, doing a big long series on Miko Satomura and Kana, and Kana uses this finish quite a lot, and obviously Kana is now Asuka in NXT, so it's like this could be, I mean, for me, I've seen this finish four or five times now in over the space of two or three years, and these finishes need to be kept special. It's TNA, it's a different company, and it's men, not women wrestling, so you know, you can get away with it maybe once, but I hope they don't use this finish again for a long time, so it remains kind of special, because it does put over Lashley as a strong person who's strong enough to knock out Galloway, which makes him kind of like King of the Hill at the moment. And also it protects Galloway, because it's like, well, you were already unconscious when he stuck the submission on you and the referee had to stop it. So, you know, you never gave up, which is, it's a very good finish for that. But again, it could be used as a crutch if they're not careful.
Yeah, and just on the talking about if they kind of had to maybe did more MMA stuff, I think in terms of submissions, I think that's the one thing I did like when Taz was on commentary. He was great about kind of, you know, being aware of those submissions and explaining why, you know, trapping the arm and the head, you know, was applying so much pressure and stuff. I always appreciated that, that version of his intake with the commentary. But like you said, they did a great job of keeping it kind of wrestling based and, you know, getting towards the end with the submissions and, you know, just Lashley adding those submissions to his game. I think he does the ankle lock now, the cross face, and that new triangle choke. So, you know, just, you know, each man up in their game. That's what you got to do to be the main man in the company.
Yeah, I mean, Pope's not bad as a color commentator at pointing out those things, but you're right. It you need to educate your audience. If you're going to do things that are different to what, you know, the mainstream of wrestling has expected in recent years, then you have to educate your audience to what to expect to see. And you can do that because you have a 2-hour TV show, and it doesn't all have to be in one match. You can spread it out. But certainly, they kind of need to educate their audience better when it comes to things like this, because it's just something they don't see. Not everyone, and I think more so in the US now, especially with companies like TNA, they tend to be wrestling fans who are wrestling fans. They don't tend to be wrestling fans that cross over from MMA. Certainly when they had their involvement with Bellator, didn't really do an awful lot for TNA, and certainly didn't do an awful lot for Bellator. So to be kind of like saying, yeah, MMA great isn't really another thing. I mean, I had a similar, who's the female, Paige Van Zandt, is it? Who's female MMA fighter. I had a bit of a rant about that on Twitter as well, like with WWE, that they want to use Paige Van Zandt this summer at SummerSlam. And it's like, why? You have a bunch of women who work for you already who will work far cheaper and are just as famous. And it doesn't, you know, it's not going to bring people in from MMA because they're going to say, well, it's wrestling, it's not MMA. Why would I want to watch that?
Why? Yeah, I don't know if it's a thing where they kind of, you know, trying to do what they used to do with the WrestleManias and use them, those celebrities kind of enhance the talent that's in the match. But I don't think you necessarily need that, especially when, you know, Sasha's kind of been kept in the back. You know, yeah. So, you know,
it's like, yeah, why can't you spend 6 months making your own stars instead? Instead of trying to get rub from another company that's after the same revenue as you. I don't know. But yeah, it's what can I say? It's a bit, I think Vince's attitude towards MMA is just a topic for another conversation, but I think it is a bit strange. Sometimes he seems to hate it, and sometimes he thinks it's the best thing since sliced bread. So, yeah, we'll see. Anyway,
I think we'll find that out. Definitely, if Brock doesn't take a L when he does his match.
We'll see what happens next.
Yeah,
but yeah. So overall, then, what do you think of the whole show, and where do you think things are going to go next, Marcus?
I appreciated the whole show. Like I said, this is coming off those. You know, we've gone in the. You know. Lent's talking about, you know, the bills for the last two Bound for Glory that's kind of disappointed us. So just seeing them, you know, be able to pull off this show celebrating their, you know, I think 15-year anniversary. 14-year anniversary. I thought it was great. I've always liked Slammiversary. I think the pay-per-view overall has kind of delivered consistently over the years. And I like the talent we've seen on this on the show. I think this is very much showcasing the talent that's going to take it, you know, to the next step. And it's good to see all the titles kind of getting that importance, especially, you know, getting the X Division back on track, and definitely with the King of the Mountain, because they, you know, you got to keep that fresh and relevant. And I think having an only guy like Drake can do that. So I think this was a great step forward for them. And with the shows coming up, I think, like I said, if they just can keep consistent with things and maybe die down on this whole Brother Nero storyline a little bit, I think it's a lot of good things coming forward. And obviously, we might have more names coming in, because I don't think that, I forgot the guy's name that they also signed with Draxxon Baraka. I think I know he was a black guy, but I forgot his name. I think you can add him to the X Division.
Marche Rocket.
Yeah, did you find him?
No, I was just thinking off the top of my head, it was Marshall Rocket.
yeah, Marshall Rocket. So yeah, that name's coming every day, and I'm pretty sure we got to get some type of conclusion eventually to this whole Gail Kim Maria thing. Who's, like I said, you've talked about it. Maria has been great.
Yeah.
Great addition to the roster, and her mic skills, her cadence work on the mic has just been great. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing, you know, how they set up with their next set of shows.
Yeah, I was just looking back at last year's event, and the company has changed so much. I mean, look at last year's Slammiversary was main evented by Jeff Jarrett, Matt Hardy, Eric Young, Drew Galloway, and Bobby Roode. Well, there's only two people on that list left who work for TNA. You know, it's become so much more traditional in many senses, and you know, so much better put together than it was this time last year. And it has been a showcase for that they've managed to, you know, keep things within bounds. They haven't gone crazy. They haven't done daft things. They've done the job properly, and I'm very impressed and proud of them for that. But equally, there are other things they could just do so much better. You know, it's they're overcomplicating certain things. certainly with the women's division, I think, as you probably guessed from my ranting commentary earlier, they could just do it so much simpler. And I worry when they start going back to that old chestnut of the authority figure, because you don't need one. And the last year has proven you definitely don't need one.
Yeah, and just the whole mention of TNA management, it's almost kind of almost cringeworthy at this point, because you're like, it's not really.
Why should management. We trust them?
Yeah, it's just like management, like it sticks a call to that other guy and maybe a couple other people, but it's not like, you know.
Yeah, Gaborik, Lagana, Carter, and Corgan. There are four. Exactly. Yeah, you know, we know.
Exactly. We know the chain of command is not exactly deep. We know at this point it's only going to be one or two of them that's going to come out. So
yeah. So leave them be. Just you stay in the back, write the show, and you know, just if you want to, whatever you do, if you want an authority figure, make sure they're a face. Then people won't hate the company, because you know you've got enough people who hate the company already. You don't want any more. But that's just me anyway. So it's a negative note.
Yeah. Just the I think how many. The next pay-per-view is Bound for Glory, right?
It should be. The next booked pay-per-view will be Bound for Glory. Gotcha. Yeah, it says TBA on the Wikipedia page, but I'm assuming it'll be Bound for Glory. All the other pay-per-view types of things that they do tend to be special events, like Knockouts, Knockdown, and Hard Justice. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with them. But I would think Bound for Glory would be the next major event they could actually build to properly. And I kind of was guessing that it would be Galloway versus Mike Bennett. I kind of thought Bennett would probably take Ethan Carter, but now I think you're probably going to get Ethan Carter versus Bobby Lashley, which they planted seeds for back in March, I think, February time.
Yeah, they planted seeds for that particular thing when he beat Angle and kind of made this real hard turn. So I think they've kind of just been slow building that, and I think on this next show, which I will not spoil, they're also gonna you're gonna see some more seeds planted for that. So that's gonna be exciting.
Yeah. Okay then. Right. Well, I guess we should call it for today. We've had a really good long chat about Slammiversary 2016. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening to the Trupenny Show on the Wrestle Talk Podcast Network, where you can find the Wrestle Talk TV, The Squash with Gavin Duenas and Paul Taylor, as well as the Finn Martin Report on a fortnightly basis. And if you're wondering where the Wrestling Histories podcast has gone, it's gone to Wrestle Plus, which you can find at $4.99 a month at WrestlePlus.com, where you can get all of the Trupenny shows, and you can get all of the Squashes. You can get all of the Finn Martin histories exclusively on there, and of course on the Finn Martin Report. And all the old stuff we used to do. I was flicking through the old stuff the other day, and things like Ben Spindler's Off the Record episodes, and the early Monday Night Review show with Ben Spindler as well. So if you want some classic listening material to fill your hours, drive home, you know, podcast on a drive home, $4.99 a month, WrestlePlus.com. There's some cool stuff on there from audio content like this, and we hope you enjoy it. So for today, I will say thank you very much. My name is James Trupenny. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can find Marcus at Paradox Kid on Twitter. Thank you, sir.
Well, it's a pleasure. Hang in there, TNA fans. Got some good stuff.
Yeah, we've got good stuff coming up. It's going to be cool. It's better. It's better than it was. Old TNA fans, come back. It's worth it. Sit down. Have an hour with it. You don't have to keep watching it if you don't like it. But it is better than it was.
It's not a third hour to suffer through either.
No. Only 2 hours. You can fit an episode of Lucha Underground in afterwards. There you go.
Exactly.
So, all right. Have a good week anyway. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye.